Welcome to the Talk Spot. This is Marcus, and today I'm joined by Gary Wayne. And today we're going to talk about mythical creatures and other interesting topics. All right. Well, thank you, Gary, for coming on. So today I want to talk to you a little bit about fairies and leprechauns and other mythical creatures. I know the last time you came on, you kind of alluded to them at the end of our conversation. So I just figured that I'd ask you more about them today and just ask you to, you know, expand upon that topic a little bit.
Yeah, and I think that's a such an interesting subject and very, very sort of in-depth subject, particularly as you get into it from the polytheist side in terms of the religions and mythologies around the world. So there's a lot of, you know, literature and classics literature and entertainment today that's all based on related topics of all of this that go back into, you know, the time of prehistory. So, you know, if you're talking about fairies, for example, you know, you're talking about four different classifications of the fairy mythos, and it's also regarded as a religion as well as the legends and mythologies around it. So, and in that classification, you have the rebellious fairies that come to this world. So they're very much akin to the gods or to the fallen angels in the Bible. And they're opalescent beings. So they're shining, transparent, spirit-like beings. And they create a second class, which are the earthborn fairies, which are also shining, but they're not quite the same. These are the demigods and or the Nephilim and or the Tuatha De Danann that people might be familiar with as a Tuatha De Danann, I should say, that most people are aware of that are out of Ireland and up into the Norse mythology. They're the same peoples and into the Scottish mythologies. And then you have the third class, which are the bodiless spirits or the shades or the banshee type of demon spirit. And then the third one is very, very interesting, which is more sort of equivalent to what you're talking about, is the elementals. And that is split into three categories around the world. And it's interesting that we don't get little people being talked about in the Bible, but we get it everywhere else in the world. And so around the world, there's a constant of basically three sort of categories that are out there. So you have the mischievous ones, like the pixies, like the Manoe, like the leprechaun. You have the good looking ones, and some of them are, you know, depicted, as like a Tinkerbell type fairy, and in various different sizes of those good looking ones. And then you have the ugly ones, which are the ones that are like the hobbits and are like the dwarves and are like the trolls and are the gnomes, and very much sort of slides more akin into a lot of the ancient alien mythos in terms of their descriptions and the agendas that they have. And so you get these three classifications all around the world: North American Indians, Southeast Asia, all throughout Europe. As I say, on all continents, there's an accounting of these little people. And typically, they have a connection back to certain gods. And so they are a creation of the gods. And depending on which pantheon that you're looking at, you know, it depends on which god sort of created them. Although I do think the pantheons are essentially the same, just different vernacular names around the world. And so these little people, you know, are created, you know, like the Nereids in the Atlantean mythology, for example, would be one example. And there, again, this goes to that concept in the antediluvian world that not only were giants and titans and cyclops and other giant creatures that were created in the ancient world, but you also have these little people that are part of the same sort of mythology. And so the gnomes are a very interesting one because they looked after the knowledge and the genealogies of the ancient ones and guarded certain portals to the other world. And in the fairy mythology, it's filled with portals to different worlds, and they're called Shays, just as the Tuatha De Mnon are also called the Shay people. And you also have fairy domens that are all around the world, and these are like mini Stonehenge type structures that are portals to the other world. And domen means portal, so fairy domen, fairy portal. So you have the creation of these things, and there are just so many of them. And what's interesting about that is they absolutely inundate, you know, our literature and current movies and things like that, just as the superheroes do. And that's all because they're related. So what we're talking about in the antediluvian world is either through technology or through gods and angels, and or angels, depending on your perspective as to who they are, either copulating with animals, copulating with people to create these hybrid types of beings, which goes to that essential aspect of what's wrong with creating the Nephilim, because it was a violation against the laws of creation. And this created with the Nephilim a immortal spirit in flesh, which was not permitted in the physical world. The immortal spirit belongs only in the heavenly dwelling places, or other dimensions, or in heaven, however you want to look at that. And so this concept of these beings that are being created are absolutely crazy in terms of some of the things that are mentioned in prehistory. You know, simple things like flying horses. Okay, that maybe isn't that big of a stretch with the Pegasus, but you also have the centaurs, and you have, and these are, you know, half human, half horse type of being that are created in a cloud somewhere, according to Greek mythology. So again, that's why I say we're not really sure whether or not that's a copulation or that is some sort of DNA manipulation. And you've got even crazier beings that are out there. So it's just an almost an unlimited Pandora's box, so to speak, of all of these different types of creations that I think we need to take more seriously than just part of the imagination, because it goes with all of the religions and the legends right around the world. So
when did these entities exist?
Yeah, typically when we're talking about these types of beings, it seems to be rather consistent that this is sometime after Eden and sometime before the flood. I think one of the best examples to match this up from a biblical and from a mythological and other religions around the world perspectives, if we look at Jesus' prophecy of the end time, the days are going to be like Noah, and I obviously take that beyond just the violence and marriage that was going on. I take it on to the whole corruption and what was behind that corruption of the whole earth, which I think is technology. And so they are in fairy legend. I'll talk about a Scottish legend here, although this is the same story that's repeated over around the world. And I do have this in my book if people were to look it up in my book. They have these very advanced flying machines that come through these portals that I was talking about earlier. And they kidnap people for a fortnight or for about 14 days. And they do sexual experiments on them, DNA experiments, and then they return them. And people tend not to have a good memory of it unless it comes out based on hypnosis and meditation and that sort of things. But the witnesses around it always know about the kidnapping and then the return of these people. And so when you look at the description of these fairies that are doing it, they're called, actually in Scotland, the Grey Neighbours. And again, you have this classification of this gnome that's like a grey. And the description of that grey fairy is the same as a grey alien. And so when I look at some of these alien things, and I know there's a wider variety in the alien mythos than just the greys, but I look at this as kind of a direct connection to, if there are any that are surviving, to answer your question, I would say this would be the best place to start looking, because of all of the reports and things that are going on these days in terms of aliens. The world does seem to be moving forward for good or bad in a direction where you're going to have a revelation of these type of beings, that we're not alone in the universe. Over 50% of the people today believe that the aliens exist. I'm not convinced if this coming out party for the aliens actually happens as we'll actually get the straight story and is necessarily good for humankind, but I think we're going to see something like this come about in terms of, you know, sort of an apex, because everything's building to accepting and meeting and greeting with these galactic beings from around the universe.
Well, it definitely seems like out of all the entities that we've talked about so far, it certainly seems like there's a bigger push to promote the idea of aliens being real and the idea of aliens making themselves known to the world, you know, just very blatantly and just very flamboyantly in front of people, and maybe, you know, something like landing on the White House lawn or something like that. But the next thing I wanted to bring up a little bit is the idea of chimeras and human technology that's kind of being developed today, that's kind of causing the creation of chimeras. So, for example, we've heard about the reports or the stories, and they're not even necessarily even conspiracy reports or stories at all, in that we can clearly see them in, you know, labs today where you see mice with human ears on them. At least that's one that I've heard of. There's probably other human limbs that have been grown on animals. But a question that I've always kind of thought with that whole idea is, you know, okay, so let's say, you know, you have a mouse today that can grow a human ear. But let's say, you know, 10 years from now, a monkey could partially grow a human brain. To what point then after that, you know, obviously through the, you know, through the intervention of human technology and laboratory work, that can happen. But the question I guess that I have today or thought is that at what point can an animal be mixed with human body parts? Does that animal then become a person, if that makes any sense?
Oh, I think it makes perfect sense. And in terms of how it will have a complete redefining as to what humanity would be under those sort of circumstances. And the chimera comes out of Greek mythology, where it was a combination of a large number of beings, similar to sort of the description that these scorpion gods had, except they were more of a lion characteristic, but other significant characteristics mixed in. So the question gets to be is, okay, we're doing that today with the Chimera project, and it's seemingly heading in the same direction. So is this how so many of these beings were created in prehistory and then a reflection of that technology, or was it actually the gods that did it? We don't know. We do know knowledge came from the gods. We do know that in so many records around, whether it's the Bible or other mythologies and religions, is that they actually did have sex with some humans to create the demigods. But in most of the religions and accountings for the little people, the elementals of the different classifications, they seem to be a byproduct of sexual copulation, but all of them don't necessarily have that same sort of source. So I think this was something that we need to be aware of, because we're on the edge of being able to do all of that and more as our technology and knowledge is advancing at a pace that is just mind-boggling as to how much more knowledge and capability and technology is developing, and at an ever-increasing pace.
Yeah, I mean, it just seems like with this technology, one thing that I've thought before about it is that it just seems like it's rapidly evolving so fast that, I mean, for example, you know, if you take a look at, you know, 1000 AD to 1500 AD, it seemed like the technological advances, although there were many, obviously, it didn't seem like they were as drastic as, let's say, you know, 1500 to today, or even, you know, you look back at, you know, 1900 to today, the amount of technological advances that have occurred just seems so drastic that it makes you wonder if that there's been some kind of intervention that have helped people advance so much so fast.
Well, I think so. And just as we had the National Socialist movement, the Nazis of World War II, come out, you know, with incredible advancements quickly. And what they said is they did talk to their pantheon of gods and their spirit guides and their celestial masters as part of the secret societies and the Ariosophy religion that they had, which is a evolution or a perversion, depending on who you talk to, of Theosophy, which is Gnosticism as its creator in terms of that religion or a branch out religion. And so I see such a ramp up of technology as we continue to move forward that it is like we're getting help with it. Because it, I don't believe it's just the knowledge feeding on itself. It just seems to be from where we're headed and going with it is that it's being coached or guided. So if we are approaching the end days, which I think we are, so the listeners understand we're not in it, but we might be able to see it on the horizon with all of the signs. This is one of those signs that I think Jesus was talking about when he said it was going to be like the days of Noah. And what happened in the days of Noah was is the Nephilim were created. And in the days of Noah, you had a merging of two banks of knowledge. You have the seven sacred sciences, which are being developed throughout the first six generations or so of the people of Genesis. And then you have the illicit knowledge from heaven merging with the creation and the timing of the Nephilim with the seven sciences and extrapolating that for the last four generations into a rapid advancement that corrupted the whole world. So I think when we look at that analogy of the days of Noah, I think that's what we're seeing today. And the analogy there was is it was additional knowledge by the gods or the fallen angels, depending on your perspective, that rapidly expanded this knowledge to create not only the chimeras and the scorpion gods and all these other creatures recorded in prehistory, but also caused the downfall of the antediluvian world or the first apocalypse by water, just as this is going to be the apocalypse.
Where does this all come out of?
Well, this comes out of, again, polytheism. So this is from the secret societies and the Gnostics. So, and it's recorded in the Polychronicon, and it's recorded in Albert Mackey's History of Freemasonry, and he's a great patriarch of the 1800s of Freemasonry. And so just to give a quick preface on this, and we see this as a related thing as it comes down in all the different legends around the world in just sort of different wording and stuff like that. So as it goes with the Freemasons is Adam was taught the seven sciences or the knowledge of God that he wanted Adam to have while he was still in Eden. And then after he leaves Eden and they produce Abel and Cain, Adam teaches this knowledge to both Abel and Cain. Abel's murdered, Cain leaves, and then later Seth is born. And what's important to understand that is there's two avenues of these seven sciences as they're starting to develop. And from the Cain side, he has a son named Enoch, understanding there's two Enochs in biblical genealogies. One's the son of Cain and one is the son of Jared. The one son of Jared is the one that's taken to heaven. So we want to be careful not to confuse these two. And they both wrote scripture, as it seems, from various different sources. So when you're reading Enochian literature, you want to be aware of this. So Enoch puts this knowledge into seven disciplines or sciences that we would know today as the seven liberal sciences. So they're very much the same sciences that we are aware of today. And, you know, they would be things like, you know, grammar, rhetoric, dialectics, arithmetic, geometry, music, astronomy, with the fifth science being what they call in the craft or Freemasonry, actually called Masonry as the fifth science. And so this is the knowledge that then is developed up to about the sixth generation, where then it partners with the illicit knowledge of the gods and or the fallen angels, as the book of Enoch, first book of Enoch, talks about. And it develops this knowledge to a whole level that just rapidly expands that knowledge. And the knowledge is sort of reflected biblically in what is going on in the Cain lineage. When we look at Jubal being listed as one of Lamech's descendants, and there's two Lamechs. Again, I'm still on the Cain lineage here, but there is a Lamech on the Jared lineage as being responsible for inventing tents and ranching. You have Jubal also who is credited with promoting Masonry, which is why he's a great patriarch of the Masons. You have Jabal, who's both in the Bible and Freemasonry accredited to creating of music. And you have Tubal Cain, which most people are aware of. In the Bible, he forged tools in bronze and iron, and is thought to be the patriarch of the Cainites that somehow show up after the flood. And you also have him as the greatest artificer of Freemasonry, who created tools and weapons and was a master craftsman and a master at military strategy, and as a great warrior, and is thought to be Tubal Cain in their tradition in Freemasonry records. So again, what we have is a merging of all of these different things in terms of what do secret societies have to do with the end time, particularly when you understand that they take their beginnings, and this is their writings, this is what they say. This is not me necessarily believing it, but taking them from what they say, that their societies were created at the same time as mysticism, the sun-worshipping mysticism, and the giants were being procreated on the earth to protect this knowledge, to bring it down through the mystery schools throughout history. And typically the knowledge doesn't always get used for good. And so that's the issue. So what's guiding the development of the knowledge? Into what end? And that's where the debate should be with on knowledge, not with whether or not knowledge is good or not. And are we ready to and have the wisdom to and the discipline to handle the development? And should it develop faster than our ability to do that?
Yeah, it just seems like with technological advances today, you know, even in the fields of genetics, but also, you know, even tech, it just seems like the advances are happening so fast, and I feel like legislators aren't really able to set what are the rules to play by beforehand. And it's more they act in a reactionary way in that they respond to what's happening, but they're not necessarily forward thinking or laying out what to actually do beforehand. So I mean we see it right now even with the tech world, and that, you know, there's talks now about having, you know, antitrust legislation brought up against Google or Facebook or things like that, or companies like that. But it's very reactionary. It's not forward thinking. It's okay, well, these tech companies are so big now we have to respond to them. And it seems like the same thing that's going to go on with genetics as well, and these ideas of, you know, these chimeras or hybrids or things like that that'll be made in the future, even cloning, where, yeah, it just seems like all the legislation now is just going to be reactionary, and it's not very, you know, like, oh, we should do this beforehand.
Well, you know, developing things as you go is no way to deal with it, because you're developing it after the fact, right? And you never really catch up on it. So we don't know, in terms of these beings that would be created, is will they even have a conscience of any form, right? Will they be absolutely amoral? Will they be psychopathic? Will it be good? Will they not? I mean, we have no idea, and we have no idea what we want them to do, and we have no idea where we want them to fit into society, but yet we want to jump forward into that until we have had that proper debate and a proper resolution to the definition of what they are, who they are, where they fit, how we're going to manage this. And I just think we're moving so far ahead of our understanding and wisdom at this point that, to me, it becomes frightening, because we have no idea what the consequences are going to be.
No, I think you're completely right, Gary. There are some very interesting topics that you mentioned, and yeah, just even throughout this whole interview today, you've brought up some very interesting topics, and I'd certainly love to have you come back on again, and, you know, we could talk about more things in the future. But yeah, I also wanted to thank you for coming on today.